big show for you here today. Justin Boone joins me to preview some things you do need to know in Week 18, some big time matchups between some potential playoffs, winning in the whole deal. We'll get into that. We also talk a little bit of look ahead to 2026. Boone's got his early rankings out. Of course he does. We unpack those. We also talk about some rookies this year that are going to be year two players that we're excited about next season. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who's all in all season. And joining me today to talk a little ball, because it's a hell of a day to talk ball, it is my guy, Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, buddy?
Well, you're getting a lot of nice messages this week from listeners out there who won their leagues. So that is cool that they're taking the time to do that. Though I do agree with your sentiment that it's the people out there who are doing the work. We are here as like a guide, as another data point that they can consider to help kind of lead them to where they're going. But they're the ones setting the rosters. They're the ones doing the work. So congrats to everybody out there who won. And yes, thank you for taking a little bit of time to send those messages. The other thing that I noticed today that I hadn't really noticed yet, Harmon, is I'm still picking up like green fluff all over my desk, all over my office from wearing that stupid Grinch costume before Christmas. So we might need to do like a deep clean here once the season's done to make sure I get rid of like all the green hair that's all over my office here. But we'll have time. We got another holiday coming up this week here, and then we'll have plenty of time during the playoffs. It quiets down a little bit in terms of fantasy content. And then, of course, once we get to February, I'll be able to clean the office out entirely here. But those are the things going on with me. How about you, buddy?
No, I feel the exact same. There's always that kind of it's a hangover period, right, in between Christmas and the new year. And I think it actually fits perfectly into our content calendar in a weird way, in that kind of weird in between zone. And let's be honest, week 18 is weird, yo. Like this is why you don't really play fantasy football in week 18. And it's a little bizarre for us to have to be like, all right, are we still talking about matchups and like players to watch, or are we looking forward to next year? There's this whole big thing coming up called the NFL playoffs that matter more for what's going to happen in terms of the stories of the season, things of that nature. So it's a bizarre time for us, and I think that's perfectly encapsulated by, hey, there's this weird fallout from all over your desk in terms of the Christmas zone that you haven't quite picked up. I mean, shoot, I'm like itching to take their Christmas decorations down. And I'm also dreading taking the Christmas decorations down. It's that weird feeling. That's where we are right now as both an NFL, you know, kind of existence in NFL media space, and frankly, just the world at large. So we can also kind of use that to transition here, because to be transparent, we are filming, we're pre-filming this episode, not on New Year's Eve as we are going to release this. We're taping this the day before. I don't know if that will change things all that much, but we do, of course, want to wish you all a happy new year out there. But we still have a big preview show ahead of us here. First two segments, it's going to be, as usual, Boone's six pack of questions. The first part is going to be specific to week 18. The second part will be a little bit more 2026 look ahead focus. Segment three, we'll do a fantasy film room segment talking about some of the rookies that we saw this year at the wide receiver position and what we can expect in terms of the year two leap for some of these guys next year. And then we will wrap it up, as always, with the hurry up offense here in segment number four. All right, let's get into it. Boone, let's dive into the six pack of questions. All right, let's dive into it here. What is the first question of the week?
The first one off the top, there are three main games with real playoff implications. That's what we're going to be focusing on here. The first one, who is going to walk away with the NFC number one seed? We got the two teams playing on Saturday night, the Seahawks, the 49ers. We've seen these two teams square off before this year. It was way back in week one. I think we could probably agree these are very different squads since then. The 49ers, they've just had a million injuries. They got the 17-13 win in that game. The typical guys had big fantasy days. It was CMC. It was JSN. That was also one of Ricky Pearsall's big games, 108 yards in that one. And that game was in Seattle. This time around, it's going to be in San Francisco. You know, these two teams are going to, hopefully they want to be playing in San Francisco come February when the Super Bowl's there. And I think winning this game would go a long way towards helping with that, because if you get the number one seed, you get the bye, you get home field advantage. that's huge. And the loser is going to have to go on the road. They're going to have to play a team with a worse record that just happens to be a division winner. I still think it's kind of strange how the NFL does it that way, but so be it. That's the way it is. The other thing is this game is on Saturday, so that makes it a short week for these two clubs, especially for the 49ers, because they played on Sunday night. And that could be a really big problem for them because George Kittle, we know he missed last week's game. He had that ankle injury. We'll see if he can go this week. Maybe even bigger, Trent Williams, their stud star left tackle. He left with a hamstring injury on Sunday night. Just 6 days for him to get right is not a lot. He is a huge part of their offense's success, as we know. The Seahawks, I mean, they're also potentially going to be without their left tackle. We'll see if Charles Cross can return for this one. He's missed the last two games, also with a hamstring injury. Rashid Shaheed, he's in concussion protocol, so a short week. Going to be tough for him to get cleared. So injuries are going to be a factor here. But both these teams enter this game just so hot. The 49ers, we know, have like continued to overcome these injuries throughout the year. This is a particularly tough opponent that they're going to have to go against in this one. But both these teams are on 6-game winning streaks. The Seahawks are kind of getting it done as a whole, as a team here. Their offense, I mean, I would say Sam Darnold hasn't been like particularly impressive during this recent streak for them, but they're getting it done. They're relying on the defense. They're getting a lot of contributions on offense from different guys. The 49ers, the story has been the offense for them, right? At least 37 points in four of those last six games. Purdy just so hot right now. 13 TDs in his last three games. Incredible. Led a ton of fantasy managers to titles. Obviously one of the playoff heroes. I don't know if we mentioned him yesterday as one of the potential playoff heroes, we probably should have. CMC doing his thing all season long. Jennings, Pearsall, they make a really nice wide receiver tandem. They got great weapons. And even if Kittle can't go, Jake Tonge has been a pretty competent backup there, right? But Trent Williams, I think his health is going to be pretty key here. Ian Rapoport, NFL Network, he was kind of suggesting that Williams might miss this game, but I think like we know, like sometimes Rapoport, especially early in the week, can be kind of prone to like speculation. It didn't really seem like he was citing any sources. It kind of just seemed like he was talking through it and suggested that. So we got a ways to go here before we know if that's going to be the case or not. They might have a tough decision though. Like if he's close, if he potentially can play, but he's not 100%, what do you do, Harmon? Like, do you put him out there for this game and try to win it and try to get the bye? Or do you rest him for the more important games, which would be in the playoffs? I think that is like a tough choice that they could have to make here potentially, but we won't know for sure until later in the week.
Yeah, I think that honestly kind of transitions into what I think this game hinges on, which is just exactly how good is this 49ers offense? Because I didn't notice Trent Williams' absence on Sunday night last week, which I think is a testament just to how well this offense is playing. Because usually, you know, we do focus a lot, obviously, on the offensive skill position players when this offense has been at its best. You know, when it was the Avengers, right? Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel and Christian McCaffrey and George Kittle. But, you know, Trent Williams has been not so quietly the linchpin of a lot of what they've done offensively, and just a legendary talent at that left tackle position. Typically, when he is not in there, there's a big difference in the offense. Not really much of a big difference in the offense, at least on Sunday night with him not out there. They continue to just score at will. But that leading into this game, we're talking about two different levels of competition here. You know, Purdy has absolutely filleted the last three defenses that he has played against, and I'm not taking anything away from him. I think he's played fantastic football, but those three defenses have been the Titans, the Colts, and the Bears. Some you know, different levels there in terms of now we're going to play the Seattle Seahawks in this particular one. So I think this is a really good test case for the Niners in terms of their kind of status as a contender, because I think the thesis for the Niners being able to go on a run is it really doesn't matter how bad the defense is and how generous it is on that side. Like, they can win a shootout against anybody. And with the way Purdy is playing right now, with the way CMC is playing right now, with both Jennings and Pearsall available at wide receiver, I do think that thesis probably can come true. But I do think that Trent Williams being in the mix here has to be a big part of it, especially when you're going against a defense like Seattle, which is just at a very different level from Chicago, Tennessee, and Indianapolis.
Yeah, and I don't want to downplay the injuries on the other side either. Like, losing Rashid Shaheed, that would be notable, right? They don't have a ton of playmakers in that receiver room after JSN. There's a reason why they went out and got him at the deadline, right? And I think having him out there in this matchup would be huge. But again, very tough to get cleared on a short week. If he's not out there, like, Cooper Kupp on the downside of his career. After that, it gets thin really fast, like Jake Bobo and Cody White. And, you know, then I think you have to start looking at the tight ends. Like AJ Barner has been pretty good, over 40 yards and a touchdown each of the last two games here. It's unfortunate. And I think we might talk about him a little bit later. You want to talk about some of the rookie receivers. Torrey Horton, he's been on IR with the shin injury, and Mike McDonald got asked about him and he didn't have an update. So it doesn't seem like he's going to be back for this game, but you wonder what he could do in a matchup like this, especially if Shaheed wasn't out there. So yeah, might be an AJ Barner game here, might be the de facto number two pass catcher. Just based on the fact that, you know, Cooper Kupp hasn't had a lot of huge games in this one. We know JSN's fantastic and he's going to come through for sure. But yeah, this team, not a ton of weapons, yet they just kind of keep doing enough to get these wins week in and week out.
Yeah, interested to see what the running game looks like. I know it's a sensitive subject on this podcast, the running back rotation there for Seattle, but they've had two very different games in their last two matchups. I think the run game obviously was, looked like Zach Charbonnet had a big time game, but it wasn't quite what you saw the week before, where Kenneth Walker absolutely was ripping off explosive runs. They had one of their better rushing performances of the year. But at the same token, I think the run game did kind of bail them out in Carolina, where Sam Darnold wasn't necessarily lighting up in the first half, but they were able to just kind of lean on the ball and just kind of get out of there with a win against a inferior opponent for the Seattle Seahawks team against Carolina. I do wonder what that run game looks like, because for the Niners, man, it's just, I do think this defense is going to be a problem for them in the playoffs. I think that, again, if they pass this test this weekend, I'll feel pretty good about, hey, they can still go on a run and potentially even make a Super Bowl with this defense in tow. But it is a very generous unit, especially through the air. Like, I think this will be another vintage JSN game here. I can see over 100 yards. I can see a touchdown. Regardless, even if he is the only game in town, it's just going to be tough for them to defend, specifically with the way that San Francisco plays on the other side. I do think the run game will be a big focus here if they can just kind of kill that clock a little bit and limit possessions for the other side of it here.
Yeah, even with all the injuries, though, I would say that I'd rather throw on the 49ers than run on them. I think they're a little bit better against a run. But that being said, we go back to the frustrations of that Seahawks backfield, that they've had very difficult matchups that they've somehow come through on. They've had easy matchups at times when they've given us nothing. So who knows? I'm done trying to project what those guys are going to do accurately. We're just going to like throw their names in a hat and pull them out for week 18. Yeah, I don't even want to dive in depth into that backfield anymore. We are done with the Kenneth Walker, Zach Charbonnet stuff, though I think I might have to mention him a little bit later, because there is one segment where his name will have to come up, but looking at next year. But yeah, it's just a very difficult backfield to project. They have the talent, but whether they can actually come through or not is like a week-to-week guessing game.
All right, let's get to the next question here, which focuses on the other Saturday game here this week.
So who is going to claim the NFC South crown? And we originally thought that this was going to be decided on Saturday. That's when the NFL schedule makers put it. I think the NFL schedule makers maybe assumed that the Rams were going to beat the Falcons on Monday night. That didn't happen. So it adds like a little bit of intrigue here. If the Panthers win, they would take the division. The Bucs would be out of the playoffs. But if the Bucs win, they need the Falcons to lose on Sunday versus the Saints. And it's a whole process, because if the Bucs win and the Falcons win, then you're going to have three teams tied at 8-9 atop the division. And then the tiebreaker for the three teams actually goes to the Panthers. So it's this like whole ridiculous scenario here. Doesn't seem like anyone wants to win the NFC South, to be honest. The Bucs have lost four straight. They're 1-7 since week 10. The Panthers have lost two of their last three. They're 3-4 since week 10. This is like the complete opposite of the last game, where we're talking about two teams that are incredibly hot in the NFC West versus now. Like, it's such a weird scenario here, because one of these teams is going to win the division and go on to the playoffs. The other team is going to be watching from home, which is an unfortunate spot to be in. It's very fun. You wish it got decided on Saturday in this game.
Yeah.
Potentially, if the Bucs win, we're going to have to wait a little longer. But it adds some intrigue, right, Harmon?
Definitely add some intrigue. And yeah, this is just peak NFC South experience, as Trevor Sikkema, the tweet that we're showing on the screen right now, shows. Like, the tweet he has here is, the Bucs winning on Saturday to tie the Panthers in an under 500 8-9 record, but losing the division title to Carolina due to the Falcons also getting 8-9 and changing the tiebreaker, while the actual best team in the division, the Saints, sit at 6-11, is truly the peak NFC South experience. You read off like the record since week 10 for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's 1-7. The Panthers, it's 3-4. The Falcons, it's 4-4. And the Saints are 5-2. It's just, yeah, the team that is playing the best ball at the end of the season seemingly is the Saints from a record perspective. And it's just so funny that they could potentially find a way to mess this up here. It is. I love this division, man. It's so like stupid, weird, and chaotic. You just gotta love it. I would say, before we talk about the specifics of the game, just from a vibes based analysis here, I think if Carolina ultimately loses the division to Tampa Bay, it still stinks because you want to make the playoffs. It would be big for Dave Canales in year two to make the playoffs, right? It would be a nice, hey, this is a feather in my cap type of situation. I still think, if I'm a Panthers fan, which I'm not, never would be, would never be accused of that. I would feel like, we don't make the playoffs, but you're 8-9. You definitely showed some signs of going in the right direction. You definitely still have some big question marks, including the quarterback for sure, but it looks like you're going in the right direction. If you're Tampa Bay and you lose this spot here to Carolina, you're 7-10. What's the fallout there? I mean, do you think there could be big changes potentially in Tampa? Because to finish the season 1-8 if they lose this game after week 10, considering the way that they started, I know there are injuries and stuff like that. It's a pretty brutal look. And I think it's going to be, to me at least, if I was a Bucs fan, I'd be wanting to take a serious look in the mirror. I'd want the team to be taking a serious look in the mirror.
I think I'd still be surprised if they made like massive changes after this season. You wonder whether, you know, they have some regrets, and it would have been a surprising move at the time if they had gotten rid of Todd Bowles and kept Dave Canales 2 years ago or kept Liam Cohen last year. And yet they have to be wondering, like, man, that was probably the right way to go with how it's gone here for them. Right? Like, it's an unfortunate one there for them. But yeah, it definitely feels like they have more to lose with this game. They got some older players like Mike Evans on the roster. You don't know what's going to happen with him next year. So yeah, this is a team where if they don't win this game and get a little bit of help, obviously, from the Falcons, it's going to be a problem, and it's going to be a long off season, but I still don't know that they're going to make huge changes. I think they're going to look back on it and say, well, we had all those injuries to the offensive line, to various skill position guys throughout the year. And if we were healthy, we would have walked away with the division easily, and it would have been a different story. But yeah, I don't have any confidence in really either of these teams. If they get through, they're going to have to play a much more difficult opponent in the wild card round, and I don't think they're going to be able to do it. But you could even look at the matchup that these two teams had. It was only a couple of weeks ago, right? This isn't like the Seahawks 49ers, where you look back to the beginning of the season and you say, okay, teams are totally different now. These two teams played in week 16, right? And Carolina got the win. A bunch of mistakes on the Bucs side in that game. The problem for fantasy, though, is it was really ugly. Other than Terrell McMillan, he had 6 for 73 and a touchdown. There was not much to get excited about here. Neither quarterback cleared 200 yards. Both the Panthers running backs were held under 50 scrimmage yards. Bucky Irving was the only running back that had any kind of success in that one. And even he only had 71 scrimmage yards on 19 touches. Baker Mayfield, like I said, you know, wasn't really playing well, made some mistakes in the second half. And in the second half of the season here, he's been kind of a different quarterback. We always talk about Emeka Egbuka and like how strong he was at the start of the year and how he trailed off. Baker has kind of followed a similar pattern, where early in the season, he was doing really well. As the season's gone along here, it's been very up and down, really turbulent for him. So yeah, I don't mean that there's a lot of things on that side where you just look at it, you just say it's just been an off year. And it would not surprise me at all if this gets chalked up to just a lost season due to injuries. You know, with Baker kind of not playing his best football, 6 turnovers in his last 4 outings. Like I said, some really critical mistakes in there as well. Egbuka, I think they're probably still excited about him. But as we always mention, he's been held under 50 yards in 7 of his last 9 games. hasn't really been the same player as we've gone along here. Mike Evans comes back from injury, over 100 yards in that first game. Not really the same kind of yardage the last two, but he has found the end zone in the last two games, so he remains productive here. You know, and now the receiving core is like a four-way split because we have Jalen McMillan involved. You know, he led the team in targets last week, even though he is the kind of the fourth receiver, but there might be some argument about that now. We have a listener question about the Bucs offense that we'll get to a little bit later, so I don't want to go too far in depth on this one, but it is just a very tricky situation. Where Evans is producing, you know, four touchdowns in his last three games versus the Panthers as well. So it's a matchup that you feel like he should be able to have some success with. I like him this week. Bucky Irving, more of an RB2 for fantasy in this one. Chris Godwin, like you start to talk about him being like a pretty risky option in that like wide receiver two, wide receiver three range. And then for the Panthers, it's Tedrone McMillan as a wide receiver two. The coaches have a bunch of quotes about needing to get him the ball more. Just four targets last week, just one catch. When they played this team a couple weeks ago, it was 10 targets and obviously the big game, like I said, but not a lot on the Panthers side that you would look to in this matchup from a fantasy perspective either. So it's just kind of, I think, going to be an ugly game, which is fitting because the last month or so for these two squads, it's just been ugly. Like that's the way that you would describe this. This is not a team surging and catching fire at the right time of the season. These are two teams like limping to the finish, and one of them is going to make the playoffs by default.
Yeah, well, you're right. We'll come back to the Bucs offense in the second segment so we can kind of put a pin in that one. I would just say on the Panthers here, I kind of have more faith in them winning an ugly game in a weird way. I know that the Bucs definitely have more playmakers, but it just feels like the style of football that Carolina plays lends itself a little bit more to an uglier game. I think particularly in this one, I do think the outside receivers, both McMillan and Coker, are set up to have some success here. The Bucs defense is just, if you can, and I don't know that Bryce Young's always the right quarterback for this. Usually it's these like veteran guys who are a little bit more good with the coverage recognition. Like if you can just sustain the blitz and like live up to that, you're going to find open holes in this secondary. It is true every single year with the Todd Bowles defense. In the back half of the year, they've been very, very generous to outside wide receivers. So, and we've seen both McMillan and Coker on these kind of go routes from the X receiver position be able to make these big plays. So I do think that, again, you're right. The Panthers are not surging into the playoffs by any means. And again, I don't have any faith that they'd upset a team like San Francisco or Seattle. Hypothetically, that's who they'd be matching up with in the first round. But I do think that they have some matchup advantages, and I kind of have a little bit more faith in them right now to be able to win an ugly game. But that might, again, just be all totally vibes-based analysis.
Yeah, I mean, but to your point, they do have a couple big upset wins this year. So maybe I'm not giving them enough credit that if they come through here that they would be able to upset someone in the playoffs. But again, I think it's been a win for them as a whole this year that they're showing that they're resilient, that they're showing that they can upset some teams, that they can win some of these ugly games, and that they're even in the conversation to win the division. Because I think at the start of the year, we wouldn't have necessarily put them in that mix. So good for them that they're there. And yeah, I would look to them to be the team that's probably more likely to come away with a win in this one. But man, like you said, the Bucs have a lot to lose, it feels like, in this game.
Let's get to the third question and the true win and in game of the week here.
Yeah, who's going to win the AFC North on Sunday night? This is the one that's held into the primetime spot. Little more intrigue in this game. The Steelers really just blew this opportunity. They lost to the Browns last week. Just
of course,
so embarrassing. I know they didn't have DK Metcalf, but come on, guys. It's the Browns. What are we doing here? Regardless, they still have a chance to make things right, but I think it's going to be tough. We don't know which version of the Ravens we're getting. We don't know whether Lamar Jackson's going to play in this one yet or whether it's going to be Tyler Huntley, who helped them get a win last week. But let's face it, I mean, Derrick Henry did most of the heavy lifting in that game. And this is another game where I wouldn't want to be too invested in this one from a fantasy perspective. Henry, for sure, an RB1. Zay Flowers in that wide receiver two range. The Steelers running backs, low-end RB2s, high-end RB3s, kind of where they've been for a while. Without DK Metcalf, though, You're not touching the Pittsburgh wideouts. Their tight ends are so tough to project this year, even though Darnell Washington probably going to be out for the rest of the season. So maybe that condenses things a little bit, but I'm not that confident putting either of these guys in any sort of lineups. The Ravens tight ends, they're not easier to trust. Mark Andrews only topped 30 yards twice in his last 9 games. Isaiah Likely, he's only done it once in his last 8 outings. So this should be a fun battle. There's a lot of history between these two teams. I think there's some intriguing subplots, like, you know, the future of Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, maybe the future of Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh. What happens in this game could maybe impact those two things. But this game has the lowest projected point total of the three that we've talked about so far, 41.5 points. That's not normally the kind of game that you want to target for fantasy. Odds makers aren't seeing this as a high scoring affair. I agree with them. I also agree that I think the Ravens, you know, being the 3.5 betting favorites on the road, I think that makes a lot of sense, because if Lamar's out there, they're in a good position to win this game. And even if Huntley starts, I think Baltimore could still beat this version of the Steelers. That's kind of how bad it is for them right now.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I feel almost as equally unenthused, despite, you know, the kind of differences in terms of legacy and names. I feel as equally unenthused about either of these two teams if they make the NFL playoffs as I do the Carolina Panthers or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Honestly, I don't think either one of these teams is one that I could see going on a run. Maybe I'm going to look foolish for that, because this, especially in the AFC, it's so wide open this year. But to me, both these teams are very fundamentally flawed. There's weird kind of vibes around both of them right now. As you mentioned, there are reports about, hey, could Mike Tomlin and the Steelers decide it's time to part ways? Could John Harbaugh and the Ravens potentially decide it's time to part ways? Yeah. There are some, you know, Lamar Jackson, as you mentioned, percolating little trade rumors there. I don't know how much stock I put into that. I do at least buy, I mentioned this on the show last week with Ray, that Connor Orr, or maybe I said it when we were on break, I don't remember, but Connor Orr had a piece in Sports Illustrated where he was kind of saying that, hey, I don't think they should fire John Harbaugh, but they might want to think about, at least, you know, if they don't trade Lamar Jackson, at least think about a succession plan there, because he's been injured at the end of these seasons too often. And ultimately, that's just a tough thing to build your campaign around. And I kind of get that at this point, even though Lamar, when he's right, is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. But you do wonder how that's going to age as he starts getting closer and closer to 30 years old. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of big questions hanging over both of these teams. And I don't really have a good feeling as to how they match up with each other either, because they're such weird, bizarre operations, specifically Pittsburgh. I don't know how much you paid attention to this on Sunday and into Monday morning, kind of the narrative about, oh, the Steelers were more focused on keeping Myles Garrett from breaking the sack record against them than they were getting the win. And a lot of the rationale behind it was, well, look at how quickly they were getting the ball out of Rodgers' hands. You know, he's just basically kind of just looking for checkdowns, or he's taking these one-on-one matchups on the outside where he's getting the ball out quickly and not successfully. I'm like, guys, that's what Rodgers has been doing for years. I mean, I remember Derek Klassen when we had him at Reception Perception. His 2022 profile on Rodgers was basically Rodgers' entire game now is touchdown to checkdown. That's it. It's those kind of performative go routes on the outside, or it's the checkdowns, and that was 2022. It's been like this for a long time. I don't know that that's a winning formula in the NFL postseason. I don't know if it's a winning formula in week 18 against the Baltimore Ravens, but I don't really trust anything that's going on the Ravens side of things either, unless Derrick Henry takes over the game as he did last Saturday.
Yeah, the Ravens at least seem to have the players that could take over the game, right? Whether it is Derrick Henry or whether it is Lamar Jackson, if he's out there, like that kind of gives them that at least hope, that potential ceiling that they could hit. They haven't hit it that many times this year, and when they have, it's normally been easier matchups. So I don't know that they're going to come through in this game with those monster performances. And I think that's kind of what you're seeing from Vegas, right? This low total on this one. Another game that's probably going to be ugly, but I'll at least be like a little more interested. And maybe it's just like me, you know, being nostalgic about those past Steelers-Ravens matchups, the Ray Lewis days. Maybe that's in the back of my head when you look at the two teams out there. But I think I'm a little more interested in this game than I am in that Bucs game. And I do think if the Ravens got through because of Lamar Jackson, because of Derrick Henry, they could maybe do something, right? Like if you saw, I would be worried as a Bills fan if they played the Ravens in the playoffs and Derrick Henry going up against that Bills run defense. Like that's not an easy matchup by any means. So I would at least give them like a puncher's chance. And maybe that's not the right terminology to use when you're talking about a game where DK Metcalf's going to be suspended for it. But still, I would give the Ravens a puncher's chance in the playoffs because of Lamar Jackson, because of Derrick Henry and some of the other talents, obviously, that they have on the other side of the ball as well, versus the Steelers, who, yeah, I don't think they have enough to get an actual win in the playoffs if they made it there.
Yeah, I mean, either of these teams most likely would be, I think they would pretty much be matched up with the Texans in the first round of the playoffs. And I don't know about that, guys. I don't know about that in terms of either of these two teams going against that defense. But yeah, really, I'm with you. It'll be interesting to watch this one. They're just a bit bizarre operations, but certainly it'll be fun from a nostalgic perspective. These teams always have kind of good rock fight games, is essentially how I would put it. Also, just last thing on this, my God, it is just, the DK Metcalf thing is so brutal. Like it's so, so brutal considering the depth of that position on this roster and the way that Rodgers does want to play. He kind of needs that physically dominant X receiver, and Metcalf's even a guy that for me, for my taste, is too inconsistent to be that number one type of guy. But the drop off from him to everybody else on the roster is so brutal, and it is just a twist of irony, Boone, that I think one of the biggest reasons they wanted to move on from George Pickens was the knucklehead factor, and now the guy that they've moved on from and gotten in his place here is DK Metcalf, who suspended the final two games for getting in an altercation with a goofball of a fan for the Lions. I mean, that guy, give me a freaking break, but it's pretty brutal. The whole Metcalf thing is just so tough.
I love the people online that were suggesting that the press conference with that fan kind of looked like a Tim Robinson sketch from I Think You Should. Like, it's just, it's so funny, right? The whole situation, obviously, you don't want to see it happen. We said it at the time. It just, all of it seemed stupid. It seemed dumb. Everyone involved kind of takes on a bunch of the blame. And yeah, it really could be the reason why the Steelers don't make the playoffs, which when it first happened, I didn't really think that was going to be the case because they still had the Browns left. And now it's looking like that punch or attempted punch could be the thing that actually keeps them out of the postseason, which might lead to a bunch of changes in Pittsburgh. It's just like the butterfly effect there.
It's so crazy. It's so crazy. Yeah. We're going to go to break here. We don't need to keep lingering on this point, but I'm generally, I actually do prefer to wear my hat backwards, just based on the, it just looks better on my big, stupid head to have it backwards. So I'm usually the last guy that's like a boomer about how people wear hats in any situation. I spent almost 10 years living in LA. There are a lot of hats and a lot of weird situations in LA that's not used to what I'm from, you know, my family. Okay. Anyways, my point is saying that is normally I'm never the guy that is going to rag on somebody for wearing a hat in a weird situation. But for that Lions fan, that guy to wear the backwards fitted hat with a suit at his little press conference, ultimate dumb look. I mean, come on, at least take the freaking backwards fitted hat off. If you're gonna have your suit on and do this little faux press conference, give me a break. Okay, we can go to break on that note that everybody definitely needed to hear my opinion on. We're gonna take that break. When we come back on the other side, we're gonna run through some more questions that are more so previewing 2026. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to sort of kind of talk about week 18, more so have an eye towards next season, the offseason, some of those discussions, which is going to bring us to the fourth question of the week here, Boone. I gave you a lot of love/ like, I can't believe you're such a sicko type heat on the last show we did together for your 2026 top 50, but you're going to talk about it some more on this show. So let's get into it.
Well, the last show on Monday, we spoiled it a little bit because it hadn't come out yet, but I had already worked on it and it was ready to go. Now it's out, so people will be able to go check that out on Yahoo. And yeah, I have the top 50 in there. And then I have some takeaways as well. And that's what I want to talk about here, because there was a few things that I noticed while I was doing it. It's only the top 50. Next week, I'm going to have much deeper 2026 rankings and we'll be able to talk about those. We'll have more takeaways even deeper down. But for this, it's just the top 50. And I still came away with five takeaways that I want to discuss here. So the first one is that I don't think there's going to be a consensus 101 this year. And I don't mean like, oh, there's two guys that are vying for it. I mean, I think there's going to be drafts where there's like five, six, seven guys that could potentially go 101. And maybe we'll see that like by the end of August come down a bit to a couple guys. But I really think you could make a case for a bunch of different players here. I mean, Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, they're the only two backs to finish in the top four fantasy RBs each of the last two seasons. Puka Nacua, he's averaged the most fantasy points among wide receivers this year. Jamar Chase just continues to be a high-end producer, despite the fact that he lost Joe Burrow for some games again this year. Christian McCaffrey, what more can we say? I mean, the top fantasy RB, the top flex option this year, just a fantastic season, though. He is going to be a year older and he is going to have that 30 in terms of his age column there. So I think people might be a little more worried about taking him at 101. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who we talked about in the first segment, just a breakout year that put him in the conversation among the elite wideouts. You can even make an argument, I think, for guys like Devon Achane and Jonathan Taylor. Like, depending what their teams do at quarterback, we could be very excited about those offenses. We could see upgrades there that makes us a little more invested in those guys. So I think there's a bunch of players, Harmon, that are going to be in that conversation for the 101, and I'm curious to see how it shakes out.
I think you're right, and I don't think there will be a kind of consensus around one player this year either, the more I've thought about it, which has been essentially the last 90 seconds or so. I wasn't really thinking about it before then, but now... Now that I'm looking at your early top 50 here, your number one through, I would say your first five players are the players I think would probably be in consideration, which is Bijan, Jahmyr Gibbs, Puka Nacua, Jamar Chase, Christian McCaffrey. I think those are all very viable 1.01 candidates. I think once we get to the JSNs and Devon Achans, I think those guys are great picks. And as a matter of fact, I might rather have a pick in the middle of the round just so I don't have to be kind of forced into one of those. I think you could potentially come back in the second round and get a really strong wide receiver one or running back one to kind of pair with those guys instead of getting one of the top two picks and then have to come back on that 2-3 turn. Because yeah, I'm just looking at again some of your rankings right now. I really like those middle of first and middle of second round options there. I think you could build a really strong team. Yeah, I don't know that I see consensus kind of circling around any one of those players. McCaffrey's just going to be tough, man. Like I mentioned on our show earlier this week, where he's had this awesome year. As I said, when he stays healthy, he is the best player in fantasy football, period. It's just typically those running backs that come off that massive workload season. And again, we'll have more time to talk about this. They don't necessarily have that awesome second season, especially at his age, you know, but at the same time, nothing's changed. So it's going to be difficult. I think there's going to be a handful of people that will just rank McCaffrey one and I think feel pretty good about it. I think there will be a handful of people that will have no interest in taking him first overall. So yeah, I think that's definitely a good takeaway here. Let's get to another one.
The second one, we kind of touched on this a little bit on Monday's show, but I think Trey McBride deserves consideration in round one. And I have him as my tight end one for 2026, obviously. And I have him 12th overall at the moment, which puts him in that conversation as a potential first round pick. And I know you pushed back on it, but it just some of the things that I think people should think about here, you know, the first tight end to average 15 fantasy points per game and a half PPR, 18 fantasy points in PPR since Travis Kelce did that in 2022. And much like Kelce that year, he just had this huge advantage over other players at his position this season. He averaged 2.4 more fantasy points per game than the next closest tight end in half PPR, 3.5 more in PPR formats. And the difference in terms of like year-long totals for fantasy, he has like almost 100 more fantasy points than the second tight end. Just a huge advantage at that position. To give him some context here, I mean, it would make him the wide receiver 7 behind only Puka Nacua, JSN, Rashee Rice, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jamar Chase, and George Pickens. That's where he would be if he was a wide receiver. And those guys get drafted in the first round and into the early second round, right? So I think he belongs there. I get the concerns. You mentioned them already on Monday's show, the idea that we could have the coaching staff could potentially change here, which could shake things up if they have a new OC there. We don't know if Jacoby Brissett's going to be back at quarterback, because Jacoby Brissett really unlocked this version of McBride that we saw this season, where he was catching all these passes, where he was scoring a ton of touchdowns. The opportunity was always there, but it took that quarterback change to make that actually happen. So I think we would be excited if we knew Jacoby Brissett was going to come back. We don't know what the OC situation is going to be, but whoever they bring in, are they not going to bring someone in that is excited about featuring Trey McBride, arguably best player? I think they are, right? So we could kind of squabble about, like, okay, is it going to be, you know, the same kind of volume that he got this year? Is it going to be a little less? Who else are they going to bring in to help on offense? Are they going to have more of a running game that they can actually lean on, because all the injuries they had at running back really decimated that room and kind of forced them to throw as much as they were throwing this season? But still, I think McBride is going to be in that conversation. Maybe he'll end up as a mid to early second round pick, but I think we're going to see him go in the late first round in some drafts.
Yeah, I obviously voiced some of the pushback I'd have on the previous episode, and I think the pushback that I'd have is kind of threefold. And honestly, I don't know how hard in the paint I'm going to go at this. I don't know that I'm going to be like, I'm fading Trey McBride for any of these reasons, but they're at least something that I'm going to keep in the back of my mind here. But it's kind of threefold, which is, one, we don't know about the coaching staff. That's something we'll obviously figure out here pretty quickly. Like, is Drew Petzing and Jonathan Gannon, are these guys back? But that's one concern that I think you have to have, just because most NFL offenses are not going to feature the tight end position like this offense does. So I think that's like a minor concern. I don't think another team would come in here and be like, you know what we got to do? We got to get the football less to Trey McBride. That's our big, big brain idea. I don't think that would happen. But still, it's stuff on the margins. The other two things is definitely just the conditions that you mentioned here. It was such a garbage time induced, like, constant negative game script. We're just dropping back for all of these guys in Arizona. Like, Michael Wilson doesn't have this kind of out of nowhere ascension at the end of the year if those conditions are not there. And I don't think that the Cardinals are suddenly going to be great next year, but again, a coaching staff change, a better run game, maybe the defense gets a little bit better. That's obviously part of it. And yeah, the other part is just the quarterback position as well. Is it going to be Jacoby Brissett? If it's not this coaching staff, I don't know that it will be Jacoby Brissett as the starter next year. So I don't know, just a lot of unknowns with Arizona right now, which we'll solve those throughout the course of the offseason. But that's the only thing that, like, has me kind of looking at Trey McBride is at 12th overall and has some concerns there. But and also, you know, it'll be a little bit more crowded next year if Marvin Harrison Jr. is healthy over the course of the entire season, as he was not this year.
The last thing I will say on the Jacoby Brissett front, like, obviously there's no guarantees that at his age and, you know, what he's accomplished in his career, that he is going to be the starter next season. But they really seem to love him there. The players seem to love him. I think they really like the leadership that he's brought from that position. And I'm not taking shots at Kyler Murray, but the way the players have responded to him makes you feel like maybe he's filling a bit of a void that was there before, being more of a vocal leader and kind of taking charge of that offense. So I feel like if that's factored in, and again, we don't know what's going to happen to the coaching staff, but if that's factored in, it seems like, I think a lot of the players would want Jacoby Brissett back there. But let's keep going. The next point that I want to make here, I think there's going to be just a bunch of sophomores that are going to turn into stars. And this is also something that we, like, kind of touched on Monday. We talked about a lot of different stuff. We were going to record a very short episode on Monday, and then, as you and I normally do, we got to talking and it basically turned into like a regular full length episode. There was nothing short about it. So we touched on a lot of different players, but this is one that just kind of follows up what I said before this season, what we said before this season, that this rookie class coming in was going to be really strong. And we saw flashes from a ton of guys. We saw great performances from a bunch of them. And I think that's only going to grow into 2026. You look at Ashton Jeanty, who I have on, these are all guys initially that I'm mentioning who are in that top 50. Ashton Jeanty, I'm at RB7, 16th overall. The bell cow usage is there. We just need that team to get better. O'Marrion Hampton, RB8, 17th overall in the top 50, RB16 in fantasy points per game. You know, dealt with injuries to himself, dealt with injuries to his offensive line. Let's see what he can do with a full healthy season. Travion Henderson, RB9, 18th overall. Took a long time before he got going. And even then, he hasn't been a bell cow by any means, but he's in that, like, Jahmyr Gibbs mold where he can split this backfield. He can still have these big games, these explosive plays, And what has happened with Jahmyr Gibbs as the years have gone along? They just put a little more on his plate, a little more on his plate. I think Henderson is really pacing to be an important fantasy asset in the coming years. Quinshon Judkins, I've met RB19, 36th overall, just looks the part of a star back. You know, hopefully the Browns can improve that offense around him. I think I skipped RJ Harvey, who it doesn't look like I added to my list here. RJ Harvey, I believe, is 32nd overall, and that would put him around RB19, RB20-ish, I'm guessing, because I don't have it in front of me. I missed that in my notes here, but of course, kind of like the Henderson thing, took a little while to get going, but RJ Harvey has been fantastic since he got that lead back job. The only reason I'm a little bit lower is because you wonder, with the way Sean Payton is, will they bring J.K. Yeah. Dobbins back in and give him a huge role? Will they bring in someone else? Are they really going to just set Harvey loose, or did they really only do that late in the season because Dobbins got hurt and they kind of had to? I really hope that they give Harvey a big workload, because I think he can be an excellent fantasy asset. Tedaro McMillan, wide receiver 17, 41st overall, just firmly established the number one target in that offense. I think we were both really excited about what he did this year. And Luther Burden, who had some flashes throughout the season on limited opportunities, now with some injuries, it's put him into a position where he's getting to star late in the season. I'm his wide receiver 18, 42nd overall. He gave us this glimpse of the future, and the future is him as the number one receiver in my mind in this offense. I wish I would have tried to trade for him in more leagues this year, because I had that idea in mind and I was so busy that I just decided, like, I don't need to. I won't make the effort. I got other things I have to do. And man, I think that was a mistake, because now that window has closed and he looks like he's going to be fantastic. So all those guys inside the top 50 already, I think they're going to be fantastic. And I think we're looking at really high ceilings for the guys that I mentioned there if things go their way.
Yeah, we'll unpack the receivers a little bit more, but I really do like that second year running back group. I think that's going to be kind of a basis of kind of the way I'm approaching drafts next year, because I think a lot of these guys, it was just typical rookie kind of non first round guys like Trayvon Henderson and RJ Harvey, just getting a little bit slow played there, and could year two be when they really take off 100% for Hampton and Genty? It was just kind of environmental concerns. And for Hampton, it's late in the year. It's the offensive line, obviously his injury as well. But with Genty, obviously he was just playing for a terrible team all season long. So I could totally see myself buying into any of those guys. You've got two more points here. I'll let you kind of just run on these ones.
Yeah, we mentioned injuries with the Hampton stuff. I think injury recoveries are going to be key for a few guys. There's a trio of players that, again, have very high-end outcomes that could be what happens for them in 2026 if they come back healthy. Malik Nabers is one of them. I have him as wide receiver 7, 14th overall. He suffered that torn ACL. That was in September, though. That should give him enough time to come back at full strength. We don't know for sure, because there's a lot of things that need to happen in terms of recoveries and no setbacks or anything like that. But he should have a chance to get back early next season and be a dominant player with Jackson Dart at the helm. Nabers could certainly join that elite kind of level of fantasy receiver in 2026. His teammate, Cam Scataboo, RB15, 29th overall in my 2026 rankings. So his injury, not quite as serious, it seems. Like, the dislocated ankle is a 4 to 6 month recovery. That happened in October. So he should be back with plenty of time for next year. And prior to the injury, I mean, he was the RB6 in fantasy points per game over his last six appearances, averaged 22 touches per game over those final four starts, really showing like that workhorse volume that not a lot of backs have these days. So if he can come back healthy, and then if he can stay healthy, because the kind of player he is, I do worry that he's going to get hurt again in the future. He plays very recklessly with his body, but man, what a fun player to watch, and what a great season for him in the games that he did play. And then we're also going to be watching our guy, Tucker Kraft. I have him as tight end 4, 48th overall. Tore his ACL a little later in the season. That was in early November, but was just in the midst of a breakout year. And I don't want people to forget the fact that he was the highest scoring fantasy tight end through those first 8 weeks before he got hurt. And yes, we didn't have the Trey McBride who got unlocked by Jacoby Brissett, but man, Kraft showed that elite upside. They said he was going to be a focal point of the offense in the offseason, and that's exactly what he was. But with these injuries, these are things we're going to have to monitor throughout the offseason. Things could change, of course, along the way. And that's what my fifth takeaway also kind of involves, unknown situations about free agency, because free agency is looming for several talented guys: George Pickens, Breece Hall, Travis Etienne, Kenneth Walker, who obviously I never want to talk about ever again, but we have to at times. I think it would be surprising if Pickens doesn't return to the Cowboys, like even if they just put him on the franchise tag. I don't think they're going to let him go. Wide receiver 6 in fantasy points per game. I have him as the wide receiver 11, 25th overall. But then you look at the running backs, Hall, Etienne, and Walker. They could be wearing new jerseys. I said on Monday's show, and I asked you, like, do you think Travis Etienne has done enough to maybe get another contract there? I think he's the guy that he probably likes where he is. They probably like him. Maybe they do bring him back, depending how they feel about Bashaul Tuten, depending on some of the other options that might be available to them. I have him at RB 18, 34th overall. Breece Hall is the one guy here where could you not see him go to another team, to a better offense, escape what's been going on in New York the last few years, and just blow up for fantasy? Just have like a Saquon Barkley type campaign. I think he is that kind of player. I have him at RB 20, 37th overall. I think he needs that fresh start, and I think he wants that fresh start. So you can consider me among the fantasy managers this offseason. I'm going to be investing in Hall in hopes that he does go somewhere better here and gets a backfield to himself in a much better offense. And then that brings us to Walker. And yes, I still have him in my top 50. Maybe I'm a sucker here, Harmon, but if he goes somewhere else, the talent is there. If he goes somewhere else, that big playability that he has, it could be unlocked, even though he's been such a frustrating fantasy asset this season. So those are the players that I'm going to be keeping my eye on. We're going to try to hear if there's any updates coming out about what their teams are going to do with them before free agency. And then, of course, we'll be watching to see where they actually sign in free agency if they go somewhere else.
Walker, I think, feels like the one that's most likely to move on of this group here. All the other guys, even Breece Hall, I mean, I know obviously he doesn't want to be there. I know he does not want to be there. Doesn't seem like he wants to be there. It just, NFL players are just kind of screwed when it comes to free agency. Every year free agency gets less and less interesting because there's so much cap space available. And I mean, the Jets could just, I don't know this is going to happen. Obviously I'm just guessing here and maybe even just playing a little bit of contrarian, but they get to sit there and say like, yeah, we know you don't want to be here, but tough, buddy. Like, we're going to slap the franchise tag on you. You don't want to report to camp. You don't want to do all that stuff. Whatever. We want you here, and we have the ability because of the CBA to control you being here. And it just, that's like George Pickens for sure. I can't imagine he's going to be out of doubt. He's going to be the guy that everybody, oh, let's see the Photoshop of him in a Patriots uniform or this, that, and then he's just right back in Dallas. Like, don't even waste your time, okay? Bills fans, you included, I don't know if you're doing this, but definitely a lot of Bills fans be like, man, they need to sign George Pickens. I'm like, tough, buddy. He's not going to be in the open market. So yeah, I do just wonder about that when it comes to free agency with even a guy like Breece Hall, who certainly does not want to be in New York at this point. Okay, let's get to your fifth question of the week.
Yeah, these next two, like, we've talked about some of these players on previous shows. We even mentioned the Bucks guys today, and we're going to talk about them in a second here. So we don't have to spend too much time on these ones, but these are some listener questions that came in over the last 24 hours here. The first one is from at NFL underscore T Strack, which is Tom Strachan, who's a very good analyst in his own right. I recommend people should go follow him. He asked us, where do you expect Justin Jefferson to land in rankings? Trying to get my head around it right now, and it's not easy. So we talked about Jefferson as a very disappointing player. It was the worst fantasy pick award that he got on Monday's show. Looking ahead, though, we got to try to figure this out, right? Because it's easy to look back and say, yeah, he was the biggest bust this season. But what do we do now, Harmon? Like, this guy was literally a top 10 fantasy receiver on a per game basis every single year of his career before this season, when he is the wide receiver 38 in fantasy points per game going into week 18. When you start looking at the 2026 rankings, like, it put me in a tough spot because I wanted to push him down further. I obviously was frustrated and disappointed with him this year, but it's still Justin Jefferson. And I don't think that he's lost his talent in like a card game or something. I don't think he has like an evil curse on him that he's not the same player. Like, this is still the same guy. We just need competent quarterback play to get him back to where he's been. Will that come? That's the thing that's going to have to be answered. But we saw when Carson Wentz was out there, Wentz isn't like God's gift to quarterback play by any means, but just average quarterback play from him, that allowed Jefferson to have his best stretch of the season. That was from week 3 to week 8, at least 74 yards in each one of those games with Wentz. He only ended up hitting that mark, that 74-yard mark, two other times in the other 11 games that he played. And he was the wide receiver 15 in fantasy points per game during that span with Wentz, which is a lot better than obviously where he finished. And he was wide receiver 15 without scoring a touchdown. You throw one touchdown in there into that stretch between week 3 and week 8, and he's right up into the top 10. And that's exactly where I have him ranked next year. Wide receiver 10 at the 2-3 turn. The Vikings front offense, they're not dumb, right? Like, they're going to get someone else in here. We've already said this. They can't go into next season with J.J. McCarthy as the only option there. And I would be surprised if they go into next season with J.J. McCarthy even in the mix to be the starter. They might say he's in the mix to be the starter.
Really?
But they have to go out and get someone else, right? Marcus Mariota, Daniel Jones. I don't know. Maybe even somebody like a bigger fish, like a Kyler Murray they trade for, something. I don't know what they're going to do, but they have to do something. And that tells me that if they go out, if they get somebody, we're going to see a better season from Jefferson. And the other alternative would be that McCarthy somehow wins the job, and that means that he's playing better and they have more faith in him. And all of a sudden we can have a little more faith as fantasy managers. But yeah, you can't push Jefferson much further down the rankings than this. In my opinion, it gets really, really tough. Like, I have some guys behind him, like, you know, AJ Brown's going to be a year older. Is that a conversation for you? Like, there's some other guys in that range that maybe you could have that argument and that debate about it, but Jefferson is still Jefferson. And if he makes it outside of the first two rounds, I'm going to take him a bunch in fantasy next year. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I haven't decided how aggressive I would be in taking him. Obviously, it's going to be a long offseason for that. But yeah, I had to do a way too early rankings for the wide receiver position for my wide receiver exit interview piece, which should be up by the time people are watching this show, listening to it on New Year's Eve. I had him at wide receiver 11, so pretty much kind of the same range that you did here. And I think there are guys I feel better about. It does get to a point where it's just the name is so big, the game is so big. I do think that even if it is McCarthy next year, and weirdly, I think maybe I'm a little more open-minded to the fact that they might not walk into the season with McCarthy as the unquestioned guy. I think it will be a legit camp competition between him and ideally it would be a Mac Jones type, but Mac Jones is on another year with the San Francisco 49ers. So maybe they can trade. I don't know, but yeah, a Mariota type I think would make a ton of sense. Even then, I think there's a chance he could just be better in year two. Could McCarthy, like the guy, I don't know if he can stay healthy, but there is certainly a idea that he could be better in year two, fully starting the whole deal. I think I'm open to that. To me, I just think that there's also like a little bit of a Jefferson problem this year. Not that he was playing poorly, but he just had a couple of mistakes at the catch point, drops and things like that, that are not usually in his game, but it happens to essentially every wide receiver in the NFL. It happens to them at some point. And you just need to have a quarterback who's going to be willing to go back to you again and again and again. And he just didn't have that guy this year. So I think also it could just be a weird, like, pressure cooking environment where you know you don't have that quarterback. Sometimes I feel this way with wide receivers where they almost overthink it at the catch point too much. Like, I got to make this play. I got to make this catch. And then it leads them to drop in the football because they know that's going to be one of their only clean opportunities during the game. So I'm hopeful that the environment can just be, even if it's 10 to 20% better than it was this year, I think that can go a long way for Jefferson.
Yeah, and fantasy-wise, we're talking about like 5+ fantasy points per game less than he had in other years. Like, that's just how bad it was this year. But I think pressure cooker is a good point to make, because while we see some other like star receivers when things aren't going their way, we see them blow up. We see them let off that steam. Jefferson really didn't do it. He was like the good soldier, and he kept just trucking along and, you know, encouraging McCarthy. And I think you could see the frustration a little bit at times, but it wasn't like he was going to the media every single week and, you know, asking to be traded out of there and all this kind of stuff, which we would see that from some of the other top receivers in the league, but we didn't see that from him. So yeah, maybe that does factor in where he was kind of bottling all of that up as things were kind of going off the rails, that he was just kind of eating it and trying to make it better. And it never did. But I will also say, in Dynasty, you don't want to sell right now. There's no way that I'd be selling Jefferson right now, because you're not going to sell a player of his caliber when their value is this depressed. You just ride it out and you hope that we get that bounce back next year. And I do think, to some extent, will it be enough to get him back up into the top five fantasy receivers? Not sure about that yet. We'll have to see what they do at quarterback, but I think he is going to have a better year, and I think he will be a solid wide receiver one in fantasy next season.
All right, let's get to your sixth and final question here of the week.
All right, so at 684 Mafia wants to know, navigating the Bucs offensive pieces in next year's drafts, even if Mike Evans walks, it seems all their draft stock is going to be low. So who's going to return value? And I should also say, this is not my friend, my buddy, my former coworker, Thomas Trance, who sent this in. But I will say, he has been messaging me nonstop. Now he covers the Vancouver Canucks for The Athletic. And I've been getting so many messages from him, Harmon, mostly wanting to talk about Jalen McMillan versus Emeka Egbuka. And I'm paraphrasing, but he's basically gone on record saying, like, he is going to die on the hill that he thinks that Jalen McMillan will be the better fantasy player than Emeka Egbuka next year. And I don't know if I'm willing to go that far, but I do think that McMillan is going to be a nice value in fantasy drafts next season. And of course, like the listener mentioned here, like, there's a lot of things that need to be sorted out, whether Mike Evans is going to be back next year or not. He is going to be a little bit older. He might not be as impactful as a 33-year-old wideout if he does come back to this offense. I feel like I'd be surprised if he wants to go anywhere else, though. Like, he has his title. He doesn't need to go chase a Super Bowl. I feel like he's going to ride it out in Tampa, even if he isn't maybe the same player. So I would look at, like, lower yardage, but still probably decent touchdown scoring. Kind of what we've gotten from him the last couple of weeks here, right? He's been like around 30 yards, but he's posting some touchdowns. And that means he's a guy that can sneak into your lineup. Chris Godwin, like, let's just hope that he finishes this season healthy. Let's hope that he gets a full offseason healthy. And then further removed from injuries, maybe he's closer to the player he used to be. Because I don't think we've seen that guy. Like, even before the injury in 2024, he was the wide receiver two in fantasy points per game, right? Like, he has that very high-end ceiling. It's just at his age now, with the injuries he had, can he get back to that guy? I hope he can. I'm really rooting for him. It hasn't been a bad year necessarily, but just I don't think he's shown that same kind of ceiling. And then that brings you to the Emeka Egbuka, Jalen McMillan debate. And I mean, Harmon, I'm trying to stay unbiased on this one, but it is hard not to feel burned here, right? Like, we talked this guy up all summer. Egbuka comes out, has a great start to his career. The wide receiver three overall, behind only Puka Nacua and Amon-Ra St. Brown, over the first 5 weeks. And then since week six, wide receiver 43 with only one game over 9 fantasy points in half PPR during that stretch. And now he's a part-time player in this offense. Like, he ran the fewest routes of the Bucs' top four receivers in week 17, had the fewest targets, surprise, surprise. Just not the same guy that we were seeing early in the season in terms of his role in the offense and kind of the confidence that you have putting him in your lineup. And we were on this a while ago telling people, you know, get him out of your lineup. He is not the same guy. And you wonder, like, is it the hamstring injury that I've referenced, the kind of timeline-wise? He tried to play through it and seems like that's kind of when the downfall began there. Is it defenses figuring him out? You know, to some extent, I do think that factors in. Is it him hitting like some kind of rookie wall? I don't think that's the case, because it started so early in the season that I don't think we can attribute it to that. But I'm going to watch very closely to see where his ADP lands. I didn't put any of the Bucs receivers in my top 50 because I think there is a lot to shake out here. And I want to do a deeper dive in the offseason on this, as I'm sure you do as well. So ADPs are going to dictate a lot of how we approach this. But I do think McMillan is probably going to be a guy that I am going to invest quite a bit in, because I think he is going to remain pretty cheap depending how things finish in the last few games here, potentially the last game if they don't make the playoffs. And he's been good. We just saw him go over 100 yards in this game. And if he didn't have that scary neck injury in the preseason, I wonder how this would have looked all year long, Harmon.
Yeah, that's the tough part with this room is it's just really crowded. And we can say that, you know, hey, the cream rises to the top. It doesn't always work like that. It's tough to overcome a crowded room where you got to get a lot of guys the football here. So I think it will be interesting to see how the ADP ends up flowing for this group. You know, will McMillan be severely behind the other guys? Because I think McMillan is not a complete player, but he's a nice player. He's got a really good role. And like his role is very akin to big fantasy weeks because he's a deep threat. He's used in ways where you're moving him around the formation. So when he hits, he does tend to hit big, especially in like best ball formats. I could see McMillan being a really good pick in that regard. But also, you know, when we're talking about the fall off of Ibuka and fall off of this team, you mentioned earlier, like Baker has been playing poorly for almost 3 months now. It's just like, and these are things are all related here. Like the statistical fall off of the wide receivers, the statistical fall off of the offense, the team losing games. It comes back to the quarterback in a lot of ways, not only the quarterback, but it does come back to the quarterback in that regard. Is that going to be better in year two of Josh Grizzard as the offensive coordinator, assuming that that's what happens? I don't know. Like that's what's so tough about this Tampa Bay conversation, because I do think a lot hinges on what happens on Saturday here. Like and then of course Sunday, do they make the playoffs? Because I do think there could be a chance that Todd Bowles, like, we've run out of rope here, and is it a new coaching staff? Is it an offensive play calling head coach? Because they're the perfect example, Boone, of why this is so tough in today's NFL. If you don't have one of those guys as your head coach, and obviously there are successful, really good head coaches that are defensive first or kind of the CEO type of head coaches, 100%, I admit that, but this is the exact problem here. What Tampa Bay has experienced is they've had two good offensive coordinators each of the last 2 years. Both of them have walked out the door after one season. And now the third guy here that Todd Bowles has landed on after hiring two great ones, I'm not saying that Grizzard has done anything horribly or whatever. It just doesn't really move the needle, I think, from a play calling perspective. So that is a big thing hanging over all of this. The one point I'd make about Mike Evans is, again, I think a lot hinges on what happens on Sunday. Does he want to walk away? You know, because I think at times this year he's kind of almost talked about like this being his last NFL season. It's the last year of his contract. I am with you. I don't ever see him wearing another uniform. But does he want to end his career on this note of, yeah, we floundered towards the finish. I had a lot of injuries. We didn't make the playoffs. Maybe not. But also, he's a guy that has a ring. His body has been through a lot. I don't know that you can count on him playing a full season at any point. Going forward, he could decide like, hey, at the end of this, that it's enough for me. And then the receiver room becomes really interesting in if it's Godwin and Ibuka and Jalen McMillan there.
Yeah. And I will say really quickly, because the listener question mentioned like all the pieces in the offense, not just the receivers. Bucky Irving did make it into my top 50. He was RB11, 21st overall. I know it's been like kind of a disappointing year for him, but Rashad White is a free agent. If you take Rashad White out of this offense, all of a sudden, Bucky Irving could get some more work. Like we saw it this week, and he get 5 catches in this past game. That makes him a lot more interesting, even if Sean Tucker, who I think would be a great number two option behind him, even if he's there kind of vulturing some touchdowns once in a while, I think that would make me pretty excited about Bucky Irving. You mentioned Baker Mayfield. I think we just got to look at him as a QB2 until we see something different. I know he's had QB1 seasons in the past, but with the way this offense has looked for really, you know, 3/4 of the year, I'm not interested in drafting him next season. We'll see how that all shakes out. And then, I mean, Cade Otton, really, he just needs a bunch of injuries in the receiving core to be anything for fantasy. Only pops up when you see 2 or 3 of those guys get hurt. So he's well off the radar for fantasy.
I have a few more Ibuka thoughts, but we will save those when we get back from the other side of this next break we're going to take here, because we are going to do a fantasy film room segment where we're talking about the soon to be year 2 receivers. We will get into that right after this. Welcome to the Fantasy Film Room, presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who's all in all season with another year of Toyota Game Day giveaways. From NFL shop gear to even Brock Purdy's favorite Sequoia, Toyota is giving fans a chance to win big. So visit toyota.com/NFL to learn more. All right, so today's Fantasy Film Room, we're going to take a look at those upcoming sophomore wide receivers, all thanks to yet another listener question that we got here. This one was from Klaus Graham, who sent, or Graham Kloss, at Klaus Graham, Graham Kloss, shout out to Graham, sent this question in: notable rookies that will get their extended playing time in week 18 and what that means for their 2026 production. So, you know me, Boone, I can't help myself. I love to put players into buckets. I love to do little groupings and things. So I've got four buckets here for these upcoming year two wide receivers. We'll talk a little bit of week 18. We'll talk a little bit looking ahead. Again, four buckets here. I've got obvious breakouts, round one rebound candidates, interesting deeper names, and then wild cards. Let's start with the obvious breakout candidates. Tetero McMillan, Emeka Ibuka, and Luther Burden, I would say, are the three guys that will be discussed as rather obvious breakout candidates. And how are we going to rank those guys in year two? So you've already been talking about your rankings here. You've had that done. I don't know that I'm going to have all of these guys in my upcoming top 20 that I'm being forced to do here. So how would you rank these three guys going into year two?
So as I mentioned, McMillan, wide receiver 17, around the fourth round. I think Luther Burden, not far behind, wide receiver 18. And then Igbuka is going to be much further back. Like, I don't know that I'm going to be that interested in Emeka Igbuka unless his ADP is like down sixth, seventh round or later to me, because I think there's a lot of concerns. Of course, if Mike Evans is out of the way, that would change the equation a little bit. But I don't know how you can't be very worried about Emeka Igbuka based on how long this stretch has kind of gone on for him really not producing.
I guess, I don't know. I feel like multiple different ways about the Igbuka thing. I guess I don't really care that his season was so imbalanced, because I ultimately don't know how instructive that is. For rookie season, like, I've been tweeting back and forth a lot with my buddy Adam Harstead the last few days about rookie wide receivers and kind of their efficiency. And a lot of his research, by the way, it works for Football Guys. He's a great writer. Really admire his work. He's talked a lot about rookie wide receivers, and typically he said if you split it up, it really is not that instructive. What matters is the whole product of the season, which is that is true generally for wide receiver anyways. Like, if Emeka Ibuka had had a up and down year where those games in the first 5 weeks were all spread out through the course of the season and all these, like, it wouldn't really matter. People wouldn't be talking about him as this kind of and disappointing end note. So I don't know how instructive that is. And yet I also think that this is going to be a really crowded room. And I think Emeka Ibuka is a good player. I don't know if he's a great player. Like, I don't know that if he is a, I don't know that I'd consider, even again, going back to the prospect profile, he was a guy that I liked as a first round pick who could be a really good long time number two wide receiver in the NFL. And obviously he looked like he was going to outkick that in the first month of his season. I think on film, he's kind of looked the same all year, which is looked like a good, solid starting NFL receiver. The problem is, if you're a good starting NFL receiver in a crowded receiver room, it's going to be tough for you to make a difference in fantasy, which is where I think he stands out from a player like Tetero McMillan or Luther Burden, where I think those rooms, there are questions with both rooms for sure, but I think those rooms are going to be pretty consolidated. Like McMillan, I think it will be him and Coker back as the number two and one wide receiver. And then for Luther Burden, I think it will probably be, it's a crowded room right now, and maybe it's crowded again next year, but my guess, Boone, is it's going to be Burden, Odunze, and Loveland as the top three receivers, and probably not a lot of guys that are nipping at their heels for more targets. I think it will be pretty consolidated around those three players.
Yeah, I agree with the takes on McMillan and Burden. I think the thing I'm coming back to, because around midway through the season when Ibuka really wasn't putting up the same kind of stats, I kept saying, like, I think he's going to be fine. I think this is just like his rookie year and all these other things that we're talking about that are kind of factors and why he's not producing the same. But I think now that McMillan has come back and he's dropped to the fourth most route runs and the fourth most targets in the offense, that's what has me concerned. Like, if he is that player, yeah, if he is that guy, why is he now dropping below even someone else? It's not just the veteran guys. It's McMillan, and maybe this is the rewarding McMillan. He's the fresh legs. You know, he's been out with the neck injury, and now he's back, and maybe he's given them that juice. But that's the part that kind of has been added to the equation for me now that makes me a little more worried about Igbuka just automatically being, you know, one of the meaningful parts of this passing attack moving forward, to the point where he's going to be a true fantasy asset. I think the ceiling for me is just coming down with him a little bit now, but I think the points that you made are very valid. And Adam Harstad is a fantastic writer. People should always be checking out his stuff whenever he's putting out content on anything like this.
No, I think we're essentially saying the same thing here, which is, to me, I do think the ceiling on him has definitely come down from where it looked like it was going here. And I think McMillan coming back this year and making a difference matters. I do think that McMillan is playing so much because, and I mean, they're essentially, like, last week they ran about the same amount of routes, depending on the source that you look at, like what was a route and what's not, everything. They're essentially rotating that wide receiver three position, which still isn't good news for Abuka, but it's that McMillan brings them a different dimension than Godwin or even Evans does, where Abuka is a little samey with Godwin. He's has some overlap in terms of that role there. So again, it will just be really interesting to see what that receiver room looks like next year. I mean, Godwin's on a huge contract, and you know, you got to wonder if they're really happy with that right now. Obviously, Evans, as I mentioned, is a free agent. So again, we're really interested to track. I would say what you're looking for in week 18 for these guys, you're not looking for much, but you'd love to see that momentum sustained for Luther Burden, both in week 18 and into the postseason. And essentially, yeah, does Abuka run more routes in week 18 than he has in the previous two games? That's something to look for. And McMillan, I mean, we kind of know what McMillan is. Is he going to have a big game against this Bucs defense? Potentially, as we talked about earlier, that is definitely true. Let's talk about this other bucket here real quick. Round one rebound candidates and level of optimism for these two kind of rough fantasy debuts here. Travis Hunter, Matthew Golden, they were selected in the first round. I wouldn't say these guys have had similar seasons at all, because Travis Hunter at least did look like he was trending in the right direction and then gets hurt after the bye in practice. Brutal, but there is a obviously crowded situation here brewing in Jacksonville, and then in Green Bay, it's crowded. Obviously, we know that. But Matthew Golden has, I mean, just shown almost nothing. I think on film, he's been okay. Okay is what I would say. Not even like, oh man, he's a secret superstar. They just don't throw him the football. He looks okay, and that's about where I'm at with him. But he's done nothing to stand out from a fantasy standpoint. Any level of optimism for either of these two players heading into their second seasons?
I think Hunter, I still love the player, but I just, like, what does this receiver room look like next year? Because they extended Jacoby Myers, Parker Washington. I mean, he's doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Brian Thomas Jr., there were some rumors midseason that maybe they could move him. Maybe that could open up something for Hunter. But could they not just also trot this out as BTJ and Hunter on the outside? And I know you've talked before that Hunter's more effective from the slot, but could they not have those two guys on the outside, Myers playing more in the slot, and then Parker's kind of, or Parker Washington, as kind of this like overqualified number four? It would give them a lot of depth. Like, maybe that's how they approach it. And when you look at all those different pieces, I just don't know that Hunter is going to get the kind of volume that we thought he could potentially get to become that real meaningful fantasy piece. So yeah, I'm definitely worried about him. You also look at their cornerback depth chart, and it's a lot thinner than the receiver depth chart. And that makes you a little bit worried that, do they go back to that experiment? Do they play him more on that side of the ball? For Golden, like, other than being fast, like, I agree with you. I haven't seen anything from him that gets me excited. I know Romeo Doubs is a free agent, so maybe that could open up something, but he's not a high volume guy. So could he just become like kind of what Doubs is in this offense, where he has the odd big play, he scores some touchdowns? Even if that's the case, it doesn't make him a guy that you feel good about putting in your fantasy lineup. It just makes him like a bi-week replacement type player. So yeah, a lot more down on these two at this point. And the Hunter one, I think, is just kind of sad because they have so much talent there now.
Yeah, Hunter's kind of a we'll see with him. You just got to figure out, like, what is this going to look like in the offseason? Do they move BTJ? Where do they view Hunter? Because I think they kind of wanted to use him as the slot receiver this year, but he's a guy that definitely can play on the outside. And I think it was really effective on the outside at Colorado. So you wonder what that's going to look like with him in year two. And just because we keep saying, like, this room is crowded, that doesn't mean don't draft these players. Because, I mean, shoot, the Colts room was supposed to be super crowded, and you got a pretty nice season out of Michael Pittman and a huge discount season out of Alec Pierce this year. So if you can figure out those crowded rooms, there is some fantasy viability to it. So we're not saying completely avoid that, but it's just something to keep in mind if we're talking about the ceiling of these guys, because obviously Pierce and Pittman were good picks, but they weren't high ceiling guys from a consistent basis all season long. Let's go to the next bucket here. This is interesting, deeper names. I've got Jaden Higgins, Jalen Knoll, Jack Besh, Kyle Williams, Torrey Horton, Trey Harris, Pat Bryant. I want you to spotlight which players, maybe two or so, that you really want to bet on here. Because honestly, I look at this group, I kind to some degree, I kind of have a little bit of affection for all of these players, but I'm not sure that there's a sleeping superstar here among the group either.
I think that's it, right? Like, I really do like all these guys, and I feel like I could make a case for all of them being really good NFL receivers and yet not like those massive impact fantasy guys. I think Higgins would be the one that I think would have the best chance at it, but he's just blocked by Nico Collins to some extent, right? I think Nico Collins is going to be the number one in that offense. And even though we've seen some good games from Higgins, I don't really know how he's going to get to that point unless this passing attack takes a leap forward and all of a sudden he can emerge as like a T. Higgins, George Pickens type as the number two. But with the way this passing attack has been, I don't necessarily feel confident that's going to be the case in 2026 for them. You know, I like Pat Bryant quite a bit. I think Kyle Williams, they're like setting him up to take on a bigger role. But I also think the Patriots are going to go big game hunting this offseason and try to get like a big name receiver to put in there to give Drake May that true difference maker. So I worry about that in terms of Kyle Williams getting a real opportunity to be more than just a contributor in that offense. So, yeah, this is a bunch of names who I really like their talent, who I think will be in fantasy lineups here and there. And yet, I agree with you. I don't see that one guy emerging from this group and becoming like a superstar talent in real life or fantasy.
Yeah, even if Jaden Higgins has that level of breakout, I think Jalen Noll is a player who's really good and I think will play a lot more in year two than he did in year one because Christian Kirk is going to move on. So, yeah, you're right that for those guys to, I think, become, I don't want to say difference makers, but just reliable fantasy starters, you've got to have C.J. Stroud in this whole passing game really take a leap forward, which I don't know if that is going to. And I think Stroud is good, but I mean, we're talking about him getting into like the top five quarterbacks. I think that's a pretty big thing to ask for here. Okay, final bucket, wild cards. Anyone that you care about on this list? I'm just going to read off a bunch of different names. I've got Chimere Dike, Alec Iomanner, Jalen Lane, Kanata Mumfield in L.A., Dante Thornton, Isaac Tesla, Tez Johnson, Isaiah Bond, and Keandre Lambert-Smith. I'm reaching with him because he hasn't played that much, but I do think he's an interesting talent. All these other guys have played a lot as rookies. You know, whether they've done stuff has been a little bit hit or miss here. And also, feel free to highlight anyone that I miss here. Is there anybody on this list that you're saying, like, I could see a deep sleeper appeal from this guy?
I mean, it's hard not to like what we've seen from Isaac Tesla. You know, they traded a bunch to get him, all the third-round picks, and he comes out this year. The touchdown scoring is insane. I don't know if he'll ever keep that up again, but to see him making plays in the red zone, to see him making plays downfield, it gives you some hope. And yet he's another one of these guys that is trapped behind some other really talented receivers in an offense with a lot of mouths to feed. So I really don't see the path for him getting enough volume to become that kind of guy that you want to put in your lineup week in and week out. So I don't know. Like, no, there really isn't. Like, the Titans receivers is the one spot where those guys could emerge and actually be like the number one. I think Chimere Dike would probably be the one I would place my bet on there. And yet he's had that opportunity this year and the numbers haven't been massive by any means. He's had a couple good games. He's also made some plays on special teams, but I don't know that I've seen enough from him where I think, yeah, this guy is going to be the number one receiver in this offense or anything. He's just an interesting player. He'll be a good NFL player, but no, man, there's not really anybody in this group other than Isaac Tesla, who I think is a good talent. And if he ended up somewhere where he didn't have as many guys in front of him, maybe he could be. And yet with the Lions right now, it's just such a crowded offense.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, too. I think Tesla's really interesting and he'll give them some big plays. He's had a nice rookie year for them. Even if he doesn't have like a lot of targets or anything, he's obviously clearly made an impact on this football team. I think he'll be an impact player for them, but I don't know from a fantasy standpoint if that's where we're going here. And I agree with you. The Titans one, those guys better. I mean, I think Chimere Dike is a nice long-term rotational wide receiver three, great kick returner, but we better not have those guys run a lot of routes for this team next year. Cam Ward can certainly have a little bit better in that receiver room. Okay, that is our discussion on the upcoming year two wide receivers. We're going to take our final break. We come back, we're going to finish it off with our last edition of the Hurry Up Offense. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and it's time to kick off the last edition of the Hurry Up Offense here for Week 18. All right, Boone, let it rip. What is our first Hurry Up Offense question this week?
Well, it's topical because of this week. What is Matt Harmon's New Year's resolution when it comes to fantasy football? What are you looking to change heading into 2026?
I'm going to try to be disciplined about how excited I get from some really good small route running slot receiver. You know, I think that particular player archetype has given me trouble in years past. I also think that it's a little less valuable in today's NFL. So that is my New Year's resolution, is to try not to overhype the next great small route running slot receiver. All right, my first question for you is, which fantasy team of yours did you actually like the most this year? You don't have to say it's the best one or won a championship or anything. Which team did you actually like this year, Boone?
I don't know if one really stands out. I've mentioned that International Dynasty League that I'm in, where I did win the title. A couple years ago, I did a one-year rebuild with that team, and I had never really done like a total rebuild and traded away a lot of older players. And since I did that, I've won back-to-back championships. It was like a very quick rebuild, and now my team has just turned into a juggernaut. So that one is nice because I have to worry about it the least. So I'll go with that one. Which team on the outside looking in at the playoffs right now in the NFL do you think should have the most regrets about the 2025 season?
Ooh, most regrets. I mean, kind of hard to not say the two that stand out in either conference is the Colts. I think got to have some regrets. I mean, even if it's regrets outside of your control, you just felt so good at how the season began. I do think maybe you have some regrets about going all in on this version of the team now that you traded all those picks. I think that would cause me some regrets. And I would say Dallas, man. Like, if they were just freaking serious about that defense, there's no reason they should not be in the postseason right now. I would have serious regrets if I was a Cowboys fan, if I was a Cowboys player, if I was Jerry Jones, but I don't know that he is capable of having regrets. So we'll leave it at that. Justin Boone, as a Bills fan, how are you feeling right now?
Not great. I'm rocking the hat. I'm trying to stay positive about it. But in recent years, I felt a lot better about this team heading into the playoffs, thinking that they had the pieces. I think right now, the only thing that I can hang this hat on is the fact that the AFC is like a little bit decimated this year, right? That Mahomes isn't going to be in the way, and Lamar Jackson isn't kind of at the peak of his powers at the moment, and Joe Burrow's not going to be out there. So if there ever was a year where sort of like a not really elite Bills team could just kind of get through and Josh Allen could be Superman, this potentially is that year. That's the only thing. But overall, not great. What's the first thing that you look forward to having time to do once the fantasy season, like we've said, the main fantasy season is over? What's the first thing that you look forward to having time to do once that winds down?
There's nothing that I think, oh man, I'm so glad I'm going to have time to do this or something, like, ooh, I'll take up a new hobby or this, that, and the other. It's just having my schedule less regimented, you know? I think that's the big thing for me, is like I can have a day where I'm working on a project all day as opposed to, oh, I gotta start prepping for the podcast. I've got Colin sending me a message about an outline or something like that. I mean, that's still going to happen for sure, but it'll be a little less like regimented this year. Okay, my last question for you, Justin Boone. I gave you a lot of hypotheticals this year. I'm not going to give you one here because I don't really want to talk about, I don't want to talk about the rankings contest because as we are recording this, I believe we don't know the results yet. So no reason to even discuss that here. That would be bad form. I'm going to allow you this moment to give me a hypothetical. Like, if you could get, what do you think I would be, you know, kind of scared of here? Because for me, I'm like, I know Boone is scared of finishing last in the rankings contest. What do you think that would be for me if you're allowed to flip it on its head here for the final week of the season?
Well, I think at one point during the season, I did do it where it was like, I asked a couple questions about like, if you weren't able to cover the NFL, what would you do? And I saw the terror in your face. Like, I saw you immediately get worried and like gave that like Chris Farley Wayne's World, like I got nowhere else to go kind of thing. Right. Like, oh man, what would be that hypothetical for you? I don't know. This is a tough one to come up with off the top of my head here. The final question of the hurry up offense. Like if the NFL didn't exist, would have to be on one side of that. I've asked you these before, man. Like, I don't really have one off the top of my head. What a blown question here for me. But yeah, no hypothetical going the other way, because I think along the way I tried to keep up with all the awesome ones you were asking me, and I already fired my bullets on those. I shot them throughout the year, and your answers were very clear that it was NFL or bust for you.
100%. That's the reality here, is that you have something that you're competing in terms of the rankings contest that would really mean something to you. For me, I just have fear of, oh my God, if I had to do anything else, I would be useless. I don't really have any other skills there. I don't know. Maybe I'd get into podcasting about something else.
Well, one of the funny things is whenever I did have one of those in the questions, because we send them to the producers without the other person knowing, we send them to the producers and they would always guess your answers. Oh, he's going to say this for sure. Oh, he's going to say that. That's how well everyone knows you. That's how predictable you are when it comes to those kind of questions.
Oh, man, I guess I'm just an open book here. All right. Well, on that note, that is going to do it from us today. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who's all in all season. And don't forget to check out Toyota's game day giveaways. And Justin Boone, that does it for today and for the year 2025. I hope you have a happy new year. Hope you're able to celebrate. I don't know. Are you planning to stay up till midnight? I'll tell you, I might not make it to midnight this year.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely stay up until midnight. But yeah, no crazy parties or anything like that. Nothing wild this year. Just trying to catch up on some sleep at the moment and feel like a normal human being again, which we're still a few nights away from. Got to get a few full 8 hours of sleep in before we get rid of the dark circles under the eyes and start to feel normal again.
That may or may not be why I'm potentially not staying up till midnight this New Year's, is trying to catch up on that sleep, which is what a washed statement to end the show with. But again, hope you all have a happy New Year out there. Fear not. As I've said, this show is not going anywhere in 2026. Even as we go into January, we're going to have a packed schedule here for you. We're going to be live on YouTube a ton. We've got Scott Pienowski, Justin Boone, and Joel Smith holding us down for a lot of respective shows here. Can't wait to chop it up with all those guys throughout the upcoming month and the biggest fantasy storylines, what's going on in the playoffs, all that. So everyone make sure to subscribe, like the show, be tuned in here in January. It's going to be really fun. Have a safe and happy new year. We will see you all in 2026. Until then, we are out.